Peter B. Collins News and Comment. It's Wednesday, November 22nd, 2017. Hope you and yours enjoy a great Thanksgiving holiday break. I'll be off for a few days. Our next scheduled podcast, Tuesday, November 28th. And no Facebook Live video feed on Friday. But I am going to leave you with a juicy blockbuster in-depth interview, especially for my subscribers to catch up with during the lengthy holiday break. Greg Palast is the intrepid investigative reporter who has exposed all kinds of election fraud in the United States over the past few years, and his documentary film, The Best Democracy Money Can Buy, has been updated to explain how the heist occurred last year. And I am going to share with you a powerful rant that Greg Palast went off on when I asked him for his view of the Trump-Russia narrative. And he fundamentally asserts that, hey, the suspects, the culprits, were right here in the United States. Yes, the election was rigged for Trump, but don't blame Russia. Do you take a position on the Russiagate narrative?
You really want to give me trouble. You know, I mean, I was asked on MSNBC just before the election, aren't you afraid that the Russians are going to hack the computers in Ohio? And I said, I'm more concerned about the Ohio Republicans hacking the machines in Ohio. The Ohio Republicans have the passwords. They have the access. No one's looking. They've got the motive. I don't think that the virulent right wing, really dirtbag who is the Republican Secretary of State of Ohio needs any lessons from some pimply kid in Russia to tell him how to steal an election. Okay. And so that really upset people at MSNBC. And, you know, they've been doing this Russia, Russia, Russia. You know what? If the Democratic Party would get its head out of its anus, and, you know, I'd love to hear that pop one day when they get clear, they would notice that there are a lot of black folk and Asian folk and Asian American folk and Hispanics missing from the voter rolls. And maybe that's why you lost Michigan, besides the fact that maybe it wouldn't have been a bad idea to show up in Wisconsin, Hillary, instead of in Hollywood. You know, I got to tell you, this Russia, Russia, Russia stuff, you're just going to get me in trouble with the mainstream media because they're so convinced. The Democratic Party has to go back into a new Red Scare. And everyone says, well, we have the intelligence agencies, the intelligence agencies. Well, let me tell you how fucking stupid the intelligence agencies are. Okay, here, ready for this? Half the report. You know, they keep talking about that report that they issued. You gotta read that damn thing. You gotta read that piece of shit. And let me explain. You know what? I think you should take one program and just read it from beginning to end. Because that'll be the funniest show you've ever had. Because half of that report is about how the TV station RT, which is Russia Today. That was the cat's paw that Trump used to win the election. Trump used RTTV to win the election. Now, here's a few problems with it. How many of your listeners have ever seen RT? They didn't even know what it is. Not Fox News. No, Fox News had nothing to do with Trump winning. MSNBC giving him 24/7 coverage didn't help. You know, that didn't affect the election. You know, Hillary hiding during the primary with Bernie, it was RT, a station no one watches. And if you do watch it, by the way, it has such pro-Trump freaks as Tom Hartman.
Ed Schultz.
Who is violently anti-Trump. Yeah. And then you also have Lee Camp. You know what they actually said, that Lee Camp was like a Russian agent? The New York Times said that. Lee Camp, who said on the air, fuck Trump. Now, what part of that phrase leads you to believe that that's an endorsement of Donald Trump? You know, maybe he was offering a Lewinsky. I don't know. Who knows what that was saying? But I interpret that as saying he's against Donald Trump. And I'm just quoting. I'm sorry to use such language, but I have to because that's what Lee Camp said. He said, fuck Trump, several times on air. And that's the pro-Trump station. I'm sorry. Plus, you had That's so the problem with is it's not just the idiocy, but that was half of their report about RT. So it slimes everything that they're doing. It's not the Russians, the Russians, the Russians. The Republicans don't need lessons from Russians on how to manipulate elections to remove voters of color. And I could not believe it when they said, oh, we found all these vulnerabilities in the voting software. And believe it or not, this is a phrase in the New York Times that would leave them vulnerable to attacks by Russians. What? Oh, Russians? Okay, let's get off the Russian. The Cold War is over, guys. The Cold War is over. And no, they don't have tapes of and who cares if they have a tape of Trump being wee-weed on, you know? I mean, I'm a little bit jealous. This is the only time I've ever been jealous of a Russian hooker. I would have taken that job. but, you know, I don't think that Trump worries about very much about being seen as a sexual predator and a weirdo. I mean, my God, that was his brand. That got him more votes than lost him. So you know, like, let's get off it. Let's get off it, guys, and let's start talking about the real issue, which is the return of Jim Crow in America. The Democratic Party does not want to talk about Jim Crow returning in America because the Democratic Party is spending so much time screwing its own Democrats and its own voters that they have no time to talk about vote manipulation because the Democrats are doing so goddamn much of it themselves that it's like that's one place where they and the Republicans hold hands together, screwing the most vulnerable voters, whether it's students voting for Bernie or black folk who would rise up and take over that party in so many states. They, you know what? Terry McAuliffe is using cross-check in Virginia to suppress the Democratic vote. Terry fucking McAuliffe.
Well, Greg, I'm glad Democrats. I asked you. I know I got you in trouble, and you're not likely to be invited on MSNBC anytime soon anyway. Wow. That's a powerful excerpt from my in-depth interview with Greg Palast. We talk, in addition to Russiagate, about the leak on the Keystone Pipeline and the failure of the so-called smart pigs, these pipeline robotic inspectors, to detect the flaws before it's spewed. We also talk about the upcoming Senate election in Alabama and how one of Karl Rove's old buddies is working on Roy Moore's campaign. That's all part of the in-depth interview. And by the way, if you're not already a subscriber, you can fix that. Just come over to peterbcollins.com and join people like Benny Alta, people like Sandra Fish. Sandra canceled? Oh, Sandra, why'd you do that? Jason Spitzer, Joe Carson, they're all supporters of the Peter B. Collins podcast. And if you just want a 24-hour pass to hear the Greg Palast interview, you can buy it for a dollar. All the details at peterbcollins.com. You click on the menu button, then click on Become a Subscriber. You're on the sign-up page, and boom, you can take care of business right there. Well, it appears the die is cast, and that the Republican plan to gut the Obama-era net neutrality rules at the Federal Communications Commission is pretty much unstoppable. And I hate to say that because I know many of my listeners are activists and you want to keep sending emails and making phone calls, and that's fine. But they're not going to be acknowledged, or they're not going to change the minds of the Republican commissioners who are determined to deal a real payback to the telecommunications industry, the owners of the internet service providing firms. And by lifting net neutrality, they'll be able to extract more money from us. They'll just be required to tell us when they're gouging us. But because they are near monopolies in most markets, we won't really have a choice. And that monopoly factor is not being addressed, and it won't be. And not only that, the next plan for deregulation at the Trump FCC is to either raise the caps or eliminate the limits on how many television stations a given broadcast company can own. And this would be a big favor to Sinclair. And if you don't have a Sinclair station in your market, you're lucky. But if the FCC changes these rules, you will have a Sinclair station, more likely. And this is the company that originates from Baltimore It forces its local stations to broadcast a lot of real right-wing. I mean, it's so far right, it makes Fox seem reasonable. And Sinclair has been exposed by John Oliver, by others. But Ajit Pai, the leader of the FCC, appears ready to make sure that they have as many outlets as McDonald's, or close to it, by the time he gets finished eviscerating those rules. And related to net neutrality, Eric Schneiderman is the Attorney General of the state of New York. And yesterday, he went public with his efforts to get the FCC to investigate that perhaps tens of thousands of the millions of comments that have been filed with the FCC about net neutrality were written by bots and used names that they were not authorized to use. He said his office has spent 6 months investigating who submitted hundreds of thousands of identical anti-net neutrality comments under the names and addresses of unwitting Americans. And as of yesterday, the FCC has just given him the finger. They don't respond in any meaningful way, and he's pissed. And he said that, this is an effort of people to communicate with their government, and it is being manipulated and abused. And over at the FCC, they say, well, it doesn't matter anyway, because the number, the quantity of submissions supporting or opposing net neutrality don't make a damn bit of difference. Oh, thank you. They're so responsive over there. Also, I want to recommend a deep dive at Vice News, where they recap the state of play of domestic surveillance of your telephone, particularly your cellular phone, using Stingray and similar devices. And there will be oral arguments before the Supreme Court at the end of the month. That'll be next week sometime. In the case of Timothy Carpenter, he's a man who was accused of armed robberies back in 2010 and 2012. And the law enforcement officers arrested Timothy Carpenter based on location data that they obtained from his cell phone carrier. They didn't use a warrant. And this is a critical case, in my view, because I think the Fourth Amendment is extremely clear, and it's become extremely optional in the era of terrorism-driven investigations. Now, this guy Carpenter, not accused of anything related to terrorism, just your ordinary, plain old vanilla bank robber. And I'm looking forward to see how the Supreme Court will rule on this case. Here in San Francisco, we've got this startup called Uber that was out of control with frat boy behavior, and CEO Travis Kalanick has stepped down. And the new guy, who has a difficult name to pronounce, Dara Khosrowshahi, announced in a blog post yesterday that Uber was hacked for more than a year. It's been more than a year, and Uber concealed this massive data breach of personal information of 57 million customers and drivers worldwide. Not only that, Uber paid the two hackers $100,000 to return the data and keep quiet about it. Now, that's a very unusual maneuver. And I want to point out that it really bugs me that all the media reporting about Uber describes it as a ride-hailing software company. It's in the app, right? Well, let's get real. Uber is a taxi-slaying disruptor. And I don't know anybody who uses Uber for ride-hailing where they share the car with other people. I think it's still possible. But most people treat it like a taxi, and they ride by themselves from point A to point B. At any rate, Uber is trying to clean itself up, clean up its act, and they claim that your credit card information, if you're an Uber user, was not put at risk in this massive hack. Well, the world's been asking, where is Hariri? Saad Hariri is the current prime minister of Lebanon, and he's been on the run for about 3 weeks. He spent most of that time in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. He's a dual citizen of Lebanon and Saudi. And while he was there on November 4th, he went on Saudi TV and announced that he is resigning as the Prime Minister of Lebanon. Then he didn't come home right away. He actually made a side trip to Paris, where he met with the new guy there, Emmanuel Macron. And yesterday, he also went to Egypt and Cyprus. Where in the world is Hariri? But yesterday he returned to Beirut. He prayed at the tomb of his father. He met with Michel Aoun, who is the president of Lebanon, who asked him to hold off on the effective date of his resignation to talk about it a little bit. And Hariri has agreed to do so. But we don't have an explanation for why he hit the road and made the decision to resign from a foreign capital. We have a conviction from Den Haag. That's The Hague in the Netherlands, where the War Crimes Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia is about to wrap up its work. And they have convicted General Ratko Mladic, the former Bosnian Serb commander. He has been sentenced to life imprisonment for genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity. And I think it's well deserved. It just troubles me to announce that this war crimes tribunal, which has been generally fair, is about to wrap up when we have so many unaddressed war crimes against American suspects like George W. Bush, Don Rumsfeld, and that gang of characters. And I believe that war crimes are being committed right now in Yemen with U.S. complicity and support. And I want to commend Alex Emmons at The Intercept for a great report today. I've linked to it in the show file for this podcast. Because what he exposes is that Samantha Power, who was Obama's UN ambassador, and as such, she covered for the U.S. role in Yemen, where virtually throughout the Obama terms, we were using it as a shooting gallery. We killed our own American Anwar al-Awlaki with a drone strike in Yemen. And then when the Saudis picked up the baton and launched a hot shooting war with daily airstrikes in March of 2015, the U.S. kind of moved to an enabling role, resupplying the Saudis, providing them with intelligence for targeting. Well, now Samantha Power is attacking the Trump administration for the policies that she helped fashion. In a tweet yesterday, Samantha J. Power said, "The United States should have long ago ended support for a Saudi-led coalition that, in addition to killing thousands of civilians through airstrikes, is now starving people. Enough is enough." 60 Minutes did a report about the starvation and the cholera epidemic in Yemen on Sunday night. I didn't get to see it, but accounts indicate that they never bothered to mention the U.S. role in this bloody and deadly conflict. In addition, The Intercept reports that Hagar Shamali, who used to serve as a top spokesperson for Samantha Power at the UN, is now pulling down six figures to try to slime human rights advocates who point out the slaughter and devastation in Yemen. She's being paid indirectly by funds from the United Arab Emirates, and she fires off missives to media outlets and tries to show that human rights advocates are tools of the Houthi rebels in Yemen. And I don't believe that for a minute, but when you're paid to disseminate propaganda, I guess that's what you'll say. It's a very interesting report, and I've linked to it so you can take a look when you have a chance. The U.S. 7th Fleet has had another incident in the Pacific, the third this year. This time, a Navy cargo plane that was headed for the USS Ronald Reagan aircraft carrier didn't make it. It crashed into the Pacific off Japan, and it had 11 crew members and passengers. Eight of them have been rescued, and they're described as without serious injuries. But as you know, the Reagan was involved in incidents earlier this year, and two parts of the carrier fleet, the USS John McCain and the USS Fitzgerald, were involved in deadly collisions while they were underway at sea, which cost a total of 7 lives of American sailors this past year. Also, military personnel who accompanied Trump on his Asian trip have been reassigned after it's been alleged that they had improper conduct with women during Trump's junket to Asia. And we don't have the details on this, but apparently they brought women into secured areas and they are going to be disciplined for it. We got a lot of horn dogs on presidential security. There were 4 members of a detail assigned to Mike Pence who were removed from their positions after bringing unregistered women back to a hotel in Panama. And we know 10 Secret Service agents were fired back in 2012 after taking prostitutes to their hotels while working on the advance of a trip by Obama to Colombia. And now we dive into the sex scandals du jour, and I have to admit I can't cover them all. That guy from the Backstreet Boys or whatever it is, I don't know much about him, but he's denying the accusations. And our friend, listener, and subscriber Ian Berman has published an op-ed at Mint Press News, it's linked in the show file, entitled "A Questionable Allegation and the Washington Post Smear That Followed." And he's dug into the Al Franken exposure, and he smells a rat. And he also posted on Facebook after his article was published that he's learned that Roger Stone, the dirty trickster who is a Trump sometime advisor, he knew that Leanne Tweeden was going to release the photo of Franken allegedly putting his hands over her breasts. He knew, Roger Stone knew and tweeted about it in advance. And that's why Berman suspects that this was a setup, and he certainly may be true about that, may be accurate. 2 state senators in Minnesota have announced they are stepping down. Tony Cornish, a Republican, announced his resignation yesterday after being accused of harassing multiple women. He doesn't appear to be fighting. He reached a settlement with a lobbyist who said Cornish had harassed her for years. But Senator Dan Schoen, a Democrat in his first term, has denied the allegations against him, but he said he's going to step down anyway. We also have a legislator here in California, Assemblyman Raul Bocanegra of the San Fernando Valley, who is a serial groper from the time he was a staffer at the legislature. Then he won a seat, and he apparently has continued his grab-hands behavior. Now, he said that he is not resigning now. He's going to serve out the remainder of his term until next year. But a colleague, Assemblywoman Christina Garcia, also of Southern California, said, don't wait till 2018. Leave now. We're also learning that the University of Rochester promoted a professor who has been accused more than once of preying on female students. And this has led to 400 professors signing on to a public letter advising their students not to attend the University of Rochester, at least not until this sex scandal is cleaned up. And the university says, well, you know, we investigated this, and Rolling Stone got it wrong at the University of Virginia. That's hardly germane. But they concluded that the man in question, whose name is Jaeger or Jaeger, J-A-E-G-E-R, first name Florian, that Jaeger had sexual relationships with a graduate student and a prospective student, and then they promoted him. Brilliant. John Lasseter, who is the brains behind Pixar, Toy Story, and all those other animation films, he's taken an unusual leave of absence. And it's kind of fuzzy what his missteps were and difficult conversations related to his interactions with company employees. But he's acknowledged that he gave a lot of hugs, that some of them may have been unwanted. Now, it's hard to believe that hugs are the only issue, but that's all we're being told so far. Now, here's somebody who deserves what he's getting. Larry Nassar, a medical doctor who was the team doctor for the USA Gymnastics Girls Squad and at the, Michigan State University. He pled guilty Wednesday to molesting young athletes under the guise of giving them personal examinations. Several women accused him of inserting his finger in their, I'll just be clinical about this, in their vagina and in their anus, in unnecessary, what were described as medical procedures. He is also accused of possessing child pornography, awaiting sentencing after pleading guilty to federal child porn charges in July. And it appears Dr. Larry Nassar is going to spend the next 25 years in jail. Meanwhile, our maximum tweeter, the Donald, still just denying that he ever groped anybody, and we'll get to that in a moment. He's broken his silence regarding Roy Moore. Last week, through his spokesperson, Sarah Sanders, he said he believed the women. And he has also publicly said that women are very special. I think it's a very special time. A lot of things are coming out, and I think that's good for our society, and it's very, very good for women, and I'm very happy a lot of these things are coming out. I'm very happy it's being exposed. Really? Well, that's what he said. And then he turned around and said that Roy Moore denies the charges against him, and that he says it didn't happen. You have to listen to him also. Now, Trump is so clumsy with his speech. And to say that he's happy that women have come forward to talk about accusations of sexual misconduct, when more than a dozen have made the same accusations against him, is the height of hypocrisy. And it just shows that this guy never had any shame to begin with and doesn't make any pretense about it now. But the bottom line for him is, he went on to say, we don't need a liberal person in there, a Democrat, Jones, referring to Doug Jones, the opponent of Roy Moore. I've looked at his record. It's terrible on crime. It's terrible on the border. It's terrible on the military. Now, I don't know that Doug Jones has a record on the military. When it comes to crime, he followed the cold case and convicted Klansmen for killing African Americans in Alabama ages ago. And he's also close to the Riley machine, as our friend and colleague Roger Shuler revealed in a recent in-depth interview here at peterbcollins.com. So I'm not a fan of Doug Jones, but he's certainly better than Roy Moore. And these attacks on him are echoed by Kellyanne Conway. Doug Jones in Alabama, folks, don't be fooled, she said. He'll be a vote against tax cuts. He's weak on crime, weak on borders, strong on raising your taxes. He's terrible for property owners. They are so desperate to keep that Senate seat in the Republican column to try to pass tax cuts. And then they'll jettison Roy Moore if they have to. And he probably knows that. But this is an ugly game of cynical real politic, and it's playing out right in front of our faces. Today's Washington Post fact-checkers took a look at the allegations of groping against Donald Trump. And I've linked to the article so you can review the cases. They are ranked by the credibility of the accusation and the number of people who corroborate it. But it's a weak list because it doesn't include the allegations of rape against Trump. And it doesn't include any reference to his palling around with Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted child molester. So it's interesting, but hardly complete, and it remains to be seen if Trump will ever face justice in these matters. Also, I want to note two important pieces, one by the Associated Press related to the pervasive sexual abuse of students in Pakistan's madrasas. These are the Islamic schools funded generally by the extremists in Saudi Arabia. And it's described as a pervasive practice. And in a recent investigation, sexual abuse by clerics was estimated at least 359 individual cases. And in 2004, a Pakistani official disclosed more than 500 complaints of sexual assaults against young boys in madrasas. And likewise, we don't talk about the rampant abuse and rape of prisoners in American jails and prisons. And I want to commend Natasha Leonard over at The Intercept for a strong piece today describing how prisoners in America can't hashtag Me Too because they don't have access to the internet. And at least half the cases of rape are caused by prison guards, not prisoner-on-prisoner sexual abuse. But only about 10% of allegations are investigated. Only 1% of prison staff found to have engaged in sexual misconduct were subjected to criminal conviction in the most recent study based on information up to 2012. So I think that's an important issue to raise. And finally, well, it's not quite final, but I got a couple more here. Trump has been in this Twitter war with LeVar Ball, the father of one of the three UCLA athletes who were accused of shoplifting in China. And it's just so tawdry, I won't comment further on that exchange. But a federal judge has just smacked Trump and basically completely eviscerated Trump's attempt to ban transgender persons from serving in the military, which originated in a series of tweets this past July 26th. And the federal judge is Marvin Garbus. He started by including screenshots of Trump's tweets in his decision. He said his tweets did not emerge from a policy review, nor did the presidential memo identify any policymaking process or evidence demonstrating that the revocation of transgender rights was necessary for any legitimate national interest. Based on circumstances surrounding the president's announcement and the departure from normal procedure, the court agrees with the D.C. court that there is sufficient support for plaintiffs' claims that the decision to exclude transgender individuals was not driven by genuine concerns regarding military efficacy. A capricious, arbitrary, and unqualified tweet of new policy does not trump the methodical and systematic review by military stakeholders qualified to understand the ramifications of policy changes. And, without knowing, I will assert that the pun was intended. And finally, yes, I'm here at the end. Have you ever heard of Eric M. Garcetti? He's thinking about running as a Democratic candidate for president in 2020. You need a further hint? He's currently the mayor of Los Angeles. All right, we'll keep an eye on Eric Garcetti for you. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast. Like always, it's free. Like always, it's available on YouTube. And I wish you the very best for your Thanksgiving festivities.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling.